Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. David Livingston, Dr. Space himself, is here. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. David is my colleague and co-host. And David's going to introduce us to the world of solar power energy, space-based solar power energy. We all understand that energy is the challenge right now, competing geopolitics as well as imagining the future based upon the concerns of climate change. Also, there is the whole matter of, right now, nuclear energy. There's the matter of energy based upon the sea. There's the energy based upon, what you'd have to say, unimaginable futures. But this time, we're looking at a website that I recommend to everyone. VirtusSolis.space is the website to find. And it introduces us to space-based solar power energy. David, would you introduce our guest, please? Good evening, David.
Good evening, John. Well, I've known John Bucknell for many, many years, back from his SpaceX days, an advocate and a great thinker on nuclear power and nuclear propulsion, and then finally realizing the name of the game is energy and space solar power is where he could accomplish that. I've met Ed more recently. And John, why don't you give us an introduction to space solar power. We all know what solar power is. A lot of roofs have it. You see the collectors all over the place. Space solar power, theoretically, has been around for a long time. You're making it happen. Tell us about what it is and what you're doing.
We welcome John Bucknell, CEO of Virtus Solis. Please go ahead, John.
Thank you, John. Thank you, David. Space-based solar power is a very old topic. It actually appeared in print in 1923. By the futurist Konstantin Tiaski. If you've not heard of him, he wrote the Arrakis equation in 1897. But as an idea and engineering terms, it's been around since the late 60s when Dr. Peter Glaser of Arthur D. Little introduced the concept to NASA. And it's been studied since then very heavily and as recently as the 2010s NASA studied it. But the challenge is, even though you're putting solar panels in space where the sun always shines and there's no weather, bringing the energy wirelessly to the ground, and it has never been commercially viable. It was a very expensive proposition 40 years ago, but all the reasons it was expensive back then have changed. The rise of commercial space launch, the advance of Moore's Law and semiconductor manufacturing, and the secondary effects of automation and robotics have allowed us to bring space-based solar power into the commercial realm. And you might know in the energy sector, generation cost is only part of the picture. You have firming costs and transmission costs, which are a large fraction of your energy bill. And space-based solar power solves that by generating energy all the time and delivering it to anywhere on the Earth's surface in any weather. So you have the ability to solve all the energy problems forever for everyone. And we're on the path to delivering that in the next decade.
We welcome Dr. Ed Tate, the Chief Technical Officer for Virtus Solis. How does it work, Ed? Picture it for us. Good evening to you.
Ah, good evening. So what you can think of is, when I put a solar panel on the ground, we have to deal with weather. We have to deal with, half the time it's night, you don't have access to the sun. So we put a satellite in orbit. We effectively put a solar farm on top of that satellite. We collect the sun's energy. We convert it into a frequency of RF that will make it through clouds, rain, snow. And then it goes to a much smaller receiver on the ground that's able to convert that RF energy back into power that can be used for heavy industry, for powering remote locations, powering data centers, and even pushing it back out into the grid. And this gives us the ability to deliver that power 24/7.
David, you have a question for John or Ed?
Yes. Is the government behind this and helping to make it happen, or is this a commercial endeavor? in the United States and elsewhere. And I'm thinking that if government's behind it, there might be more money and it would happen faster.
David, it is a very complex answer to your question. Since it has been studied by agencies here in the U.S. for quite some time, there's very varying opinions. And you might know that we have both NASA, which is, you know, mission is to do space science and exploration, and we have the Department of Energy, whose job it is to solve all of our energy challenges. And they have agreed very long time ago to not to mess in each other's domains. And so to some degree, there's this little tension there. And of course, NASA published a study this January saying, hey, you know what, we've looked at this most recently, and it's not great as a topic, but I would say their assumptions were a little bit skewed on what is possible as opposed to historical studies from a long time ago. So here in the U.S., not great support. There's been Congressman Mullins of Daly City, California, has pushed some legislation out there that's pending to make NASA and the DOE work on this topic. But I would say, in general, it's the government support is elsewhere, primarily here in Europe. I'm calling in from Munich, and there are much more interest over here because they don't have the hang-ups from a long history of interaction that the United States has. So there are other organizations globally that are supported by the governments, but they're mostly researching, not commercialization efforts.
And I think you can fairly introduce solar-based sun power, space-based solar power, on the basis of the fact it doesn't have any of the negatives that all the other familiar sources do. The sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't always blow, we poison the air, and climate change. I don't see on your website any negatives of solar power. So are we looking at something that's clearly has an advantage over all other sources? Is that the way to understand this, Ed?
That's how we see it. And in fact, in addition to the things you mentioned, there's a lot of invisible things that variable renewables require. So like it's not transparent, but we can't necessarily efficiently produce solar everywhere, which means that we try to produce solar in northern climates, especially during winter and cloudy months throughout the year. The solar farms need to be huge, taking up lots of agricultural land. A lot of the variable annual renewables require large quantities of land to make work. So from our standpoint, we think this solves a lot of them. We don't need transmission. We're actually able to move power from one end of a continent to another by steering the beam that we deliver to receivers that are in different locations. We don't need batteries for storage because we can deliver the power 24/7. And we don't necessarily have to have the consumers managed on when they're going to use the power because it's simply not available in the system. So we think it provides, oh, and one other one, it also requires a lot less minerals. When you start looking at how much material is needed to make this work, just out of necessity, it has to be light to be put into orbit. The total amount of minerals that are critical are very low. So we think we are the most efficient solution in a lot of ways to make it happen. And we have almost no downsides to doing this.
David, you have a question for Dr. Tate.
For either, for your company, Virtus Solis, I know you're doing power beaming experiments. Tell us what you're doing and what kind of timelines and outcomes you're looking for with what your company is actually doing to make this happen.
Yeah. So we've gone through three generations of hardware so far. We started with something very small that we could test in a lab. We moved up to something which would move power across a football field. Last year, we demonstrated the ability to move power 100 meters and more in across a football field, literally. We're now in the process of trying to improve all the pieces that we have so that we get higher efficiencies. We have higher quality beams that we do. And we've announced a in-space demonstration for 2027, partnering with another one of our partners to make that happen. And we are moving towards making this a reality today.
What's the timeline, John, for imagine you're the CEO? How do you picture yourself in 10 years?
Well, by that point, we should have something on the order of 30 gigawatts of solar power plants deployed. We anticipate our first commercial power plant operational in 2030, following the successful pilot plant demonstration in 2027. From there, this is a manufacturing play, scaling up manufacturing to harness the power of the economies of scale and increasing manufacturing capacity globally such that we can install more and more capacity annually for our customers. So by the late 2030s, we plan to have something in the neighborhood of 50 gigawatts. That's equivalent to 15 nuclear power plants deployed globally.
50 gigawatts. David, we have a minute if you have a quick question.
Yeah. Is your power beam safe? Can you comment on that?
Ed?
Yeah. So with the power beam, there's already existing standards on being in these sort of RF sources. If you walk by a cell phone tower, you have a cell phone in your pocket, there's already regulations on how this works. The frequencies that we're going to be running space-based solar power at are actually right in the middle of the bands that are used for your cell phones today. The safety is going to be ensured by making sure that people can't get into areas where the power levels are high, and outside of our receiving sites, the power levels will be low enough that if we do everything right, you won't even be able to detect it.
The company is Virtus Solis, V-I-R-T-U-S, new word, S-O-L-I-S. VirtusSolis.space is the website. We thank the CEO, John Bucknell. We thank the Chief Technical Officer, Dr. Edward Tate. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N with David Livingston. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Having MG can make cooking difficult, but over the years, I found some really helpful tools and tips that I'm excited to share. Hi, I'm Alicia. I think cooking should always be fun, creative, and of course, delicious. These black bean burgers are hearty, full of flavor, and MG friendly. You're gonna love them.
Check out Alicia's black bean burger cooking video and other recipes full of tips and tricks for managing common MG symptoms while cooking only at mg-united.com.
Ready? Let's cook.